Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Escana for immigration.com, the law office of Rajiv Escana, PC. Today is May 9th, 2013. This is a community conference call, the purpose of which is to disseminate information as best as we can. Please remember, this call is being recorded, so if you do not wish your voice to be recorded, don't speak up, just listen. And if you want to keep your identity confidential, by all means, do so, because this call will be made publicly available. By participating in this call, you don't become our client, and we don't become your lawyers either. The purpose is merely to give you information as best as we can. Please do not consider this to be a substitute for an in-depth consultation. We are doing the best we can just to give you some guidance on the issues that you have. I will answer, as usual, the questions that have been written down in our forums first. Then I will take up follow-up questions on those, and then if time permits, we will go over new questions. Okay? Starting with the first question, KK100, or it's 1000, says, excuse me, some allergies here. Wife EAD AP expired, how to get her back to USA? The problem is this, Mr. Kumar. Once your AP expires and you don't have an H-1 visa or H-4 visa, your 485 can be considered abandoned. There's a little bit of gray area here. What when I leave USA, what if I don't have an H-1 visa, but I have an advance parole? Now my advance parole expires. I'm outside USA. My 485 is pending in USA. Advance parole expired. Now I go and get my H-1 visa stamp. Am I okay? Well, you know, we don't really know. We think that's okay. Maybe. Okay. But if the advance parole expires and you don't have an H-1 visa or an H-4 visa stamp, if you have a pre-existing H-1, H-4, you are definitely okay. But if you get an H-1, H-4 after the AP has expired, are you okay? I'm not sure the law has that kind of granularity clearly stated. But of course, you can try. Worst case scenario, you may have to reapply for the I-485 once you're back in USA on H-1 or H-4. And that can only be done when the priority date is gone. So you'll lose some money, maybe nothing else, of course, EAD for your wife. So after describing the situation, you asked me, shall we go for H-4 stamping based upon my H-1, on my H-1B approval? So you have an H-1B approval, and you have your advance parole is also good. So the question is, can she get an H-4 even if I traveled an advance parole sometime earlier? And I think yes. I think yes. So because you are maintaining H-1 status, even though you have traveled on advance parole, I think she should be able to get her H-4. Remember one thing, though. The consulate can sometimes insist that you must also get an H-1 visa stamp. They don't always do that. They are inconsistent. But they can insist if they so choose. Okay. You cannot apply for a renewal of an advance parole from outside USA. For advance parole, which is not like normal parole, humanitarian parole, different kinds of paroles are there. But for advance parole, you have to be in USA. Okay. And if you get an H-4 visa stamp and she comes back in, there is good argument. I don't know if it's legally perfect, but it's good argument that I-485 is not abandoned. Next question is from Amol, who wants to know, I am on F-1 for my PhD. He wants to travel on OPT, but his visa would have been expired, his F-1 visa. So does he have to get an F-1 visa stamp? The answer is yes. There are a whole lot of other issues when you travel on F-1 with the H-1 pending. So just be aware of them. Talk with your lawyers. I could be a little bit off because I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about this, but from what I remember doing the analysis a few months back, actually, it looked to me this was the situation. First of all, if you are in OPT, whether it's CAP-CAP or, let me rephrase that, whether it's a 17-month extension or the first 12 months, you should not travel before the H-1 is approved. Once the H-1 is approved, it appears from our conversations with USCIS, it appears that it's okay for you to travel and re-enter U.S. on F-1 visa before October 1st. So while the H-1 is pending, don't travel. If it is approved, you can travel and come back on F-1 visa, and you should be okay to start work on H-1 October 1st. That's what I understand. I'm not sure I can give you anything in writing on this. Okay. So can you travel after you've joined the job before getting your H-1? Sure. You can come in on F-1 visa and then apply for H-1 on April 1st of next year. Okay. I'm Navneet. Port of entry problem. I'm on H-1B visa, which is expiring in November 2013. So wife is coming just 1 month before her H-4 expires. Just one month H-1 visa validity. Is she okay to enter? Definitely. Even if it is 1 day before her H-4, I don't see why she cannot enter. Okay. So as long as the visa is valid, whether it is for 30 days or less, she should be able to enter U.S. Tomboy had an interesting situation. They are on E-1. Their son will be turning 21 in 3 years. And of course, if the new laws get passed, only illegal people will be covered, not legal people. So what does he do, the child? Does he have to go home? Well, he can do what everybody else does. He can go to F-1, then from F-1 to 1 year of optional practical training. And if he is covered by STEM degrees, if he's doing a course in science, technology, engineering, or mathematics, he will be able to get another extension of about 17 more months so he can continue working. Then he can convert to H-1 like the rest of the world does and apply for his own green card. Of course, you can, you don't have a green card. Another option is if you want to, you can consider doing some kind of an EB-5 application. I don't know what the amount of an investment is, but maybe there is a transition possible from E-1 to EB-5. Your case should be looked at, okay? So, but your son does not have to leave. He'll have other options. Next question is Ailalu. He says, hi, Rajiv. I'm sorry I missed your April 27th podcast because I have a lot of questions regarding family-based petitions. Yeah, I had a bunch of people that day because everybody seemed to have the same set of issues. So I recorded a separate session for them, just to answer family-based issues. You had applied for a green card for your parents in 2004. They were in the U.S. on a visitor's visa. So you applied I-130 and 45 concurrently. They got their green card, returned back, but then your father was diagnosed with cancer and then an untreatable heart condition, so they couldn't come back. Both surrendered their green cards. Okay. Father expired in 2012. I'm sorry to hear that. Mother is all by herself. So we would like to sponsor her for a green card. So the questions are as follows. The fact that she had a green card before and surrendered it, is that a problem? No, it isn't. That's not a problem. The fact that she surrendered an earlier green card is no ground for denial of her I-130 again. No problem. She's currently in the U.S. on a visitor visa. Can we apply while she's here? The answer is, as long as there was no preconceived intention. So when she started from India, you had no intention of converting her to green card. But after a few months, you have changed your mind. That's okay. You can apply for her when she's here. Should she apply from Mumbai? Sure, she can do that as well. Can the family-based green card processing be done partly while she's in the U.S.? Yeah, you can file the I-130 by itself. And then step two can be done at the consulate. No problem at all. There is no problem at all. Any recommendation for which one might be sooner? Well, if she's here and you file I-130 for 85, then she can continue to stay here. Chances of getting a green card are very, very good. I mean, there is just because once a green card is denied is not a ground for questioning the second green card. Okay? But definitely if you apply for a green card, then multiple entry visa the tourist visa becomes problematic. They can create a problem for her if she tries to enter on a tourist visa if a green card is going on. Okay. I trust that sums up your the answers to your questions. Sri World wants to know, currently on H4, applied H1 this year, traveling to India while status is pending. So wife is on H4, applied for H1B, status is pending. She's traveling to India 11th May, which is the day after tomorrow, and will return in June 1st week. So questions. If her H1 gets approved, should she go for H1 stamping? One thing I want to point out to you is, if H1 is approved and she wants to go for H1 stamping, then she cannot enter USA on H1 until about 10 days from October 1st. So last week or so of September, she'll be able to enter, not before. If somebody travels while their change of status is pending, like H4 to H1, USCIS can take the position that change of status is abandoned. Okay? But like I told about, I just talked about when you're on F1, if your F1 to H1 is approved and then you travel, USCIS seems to take the position, even if you re-enter on F1 or H4, nothing happens, your H1B automatically kicks in on October 1st. Okay. So, to sum up the discussion, here's the situation. Because she's traveling to India before her H1 gets approved, if she comes back on H4, she will have to apply for H1 change of status again, which is like redoing the H1, but it does not involve quota issues. Okay? Change of status from H4 to H1 would not involve quota issues. If she wants to wait in India and get H1 stamp, then she cannot enter USA until September 21st or so. Okay? Should she get a job to get her H4 approval? I'm not sure what that means. Of course, you have to get a job before an H1 can be applied. So I'm not sure what you mean by that question. Hopefully you are here and you can tell me what you mean. Next question is, so there is a criminal conviction of some kind, a green card holder. Sir, I think you definitely need to speak with a lawyer. And in this case, probably a California lawyer, because somebody needs to take a look at the law. Let me give you a very brief rundown of what the law on criminal problems is. Okay, I'm not discussing the law on intoxication, drunk driving. That's a separate set of issues. But let's just talk about in general crime. If someone has committed only one misdemeanor, let me rephrase that. If somebody has committed a crime but it's not a crime of moral turpitude, you may be okay. Depends upon the nature of crime. What is a crime of moral turpitude? There is a plethora of decisions, thousands of cases that say what a crime of moral turpitude is. And because every state has its own criminal law, so Board of Immigration Appeals has addressed the law of every state. So you can imagine hundreds of crimes, 50 states, thousands of cases. That's why I wanted to get a lawyer in California. We can provide you advice, but it will not be as good as somebody sitting in California dealing with these issues. So you need to get to talk to a lawyer who does deportation cases in California. Okay? So if a crime is not moral turpitude, you're probably okay. If a crime is moral turpitude, we look at whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony. Less than 1 year in prison, possible punishment, that's a misdemeanor. One misdemeanor in the entire lifetime is allowed. That's called petty offense exception. We forgive it. More than one misdemeanor, we can have issues. Felony, which is a crime of moral turpitude, we can have problems. The biggest confusing thing about immigration law and crimes is this. Like you said, I wasn't convicted. I went through APPS, Alternative Prosecution Program. You know what is not prosecution and ultimately conviction under criminal law may still be conviction under immigration law. You cannot assume that. So you need somebody who does this kind of cases, and this is not an easy area of the law. Very complicated, and very few people have the expertise and the knowledge to know the law. But I would want you to talk with somebody who is good in this and who has, who is practicing in California. Okay? Now, the next question has come up actually twice today. Somebody else asked me the same question a little bit earlier in one of my consultations. Earning opportunities for H-4 visa holder. Okay, so this person wants to know, is there any way for me to engage in income generating activity on H-4? The answer is, in my opinion, no. Other than passive investment. And by passive investment, I mean something like putting money in the stock exchange and not doing anything active with it. Okay, if you invest in a smaller company, and you are involved in, even with a little bit of the management, you're probably violating the law. Okay. What if your employer is in India? See, my problem is when I look at the laws, it appears to me, and I haven't looked at this issue for a few years now, but when I did look at this issue, it was quite clear to me that what we are targeting is work on U.S. soil. Okay, the definition of employer, there's a bunch of problems here. I think it's section, I want to say 247A.1, something like that. The section that deals with employment. It's called Control of Employment of Aliens. So HCFR 274. HCFR 8, Volume 8, Code of Federal Regulations, section 274A.1. I think that's what the section is. It has some very confusing and misleading kind of language. It appears if you're an independent contractor, you can get away with anything. Not true. Walmart, a few years ago, had to pay close to $1 million in fines because they tried to get illegal workforce to work for them and then tried to defend, saying these are independent contractors, and the government said no. And, well, the case didn't go to court. They settled the case. But obviously, there was exposure. So problem is, employer is defined widely enough to cover anyone, any company that hires people to work for them on U.S. soil. So the employer themselves don't have to be in U.S. Okay? Work for any kind of remuneration or other compensation, like any benefits. Okay? It does not appear to me to be possible to do work of any kind. If you did day trading, for example, that probably is unauthorized employment, I think, because passive investment and active trading are two different things. Can you write articles? I think those could be a problem as well. If you're getting paid for it in cash or in kind, even if you get paid in India, that's still the same problem. The work is being done in U.S. soil. How to find a non-profit employer exempt from H-1B? Ma'am, I have no idea. The language of the law is non-profit research organization, a government research organization, or an institution of higher learning. Remember, it is not the employer who is quota exempt. It is the job that is quota exempt. So if I hire you to work in the university as a teacher, so you are going through me, the job may still be exempt. Even though I am the employer, the job that you are doing is quota exempt. Something like that. Okay. So you said, what does it mean to get dividend? What I just told you. The idea is you went and bought stock, IBM stock, okay, and you invested $10,000. It doesn't mean that you can now go and manage IBM. You can't just walk in, pull up a chair and say, hey, I bought stock in IBM, I'm going to manage it. So when there is a large distance, a great distance between investment and control, it is a passive investment. That's the way I understand it. I'm not an expert in investments or in accounting, but I hope I know enough to be able to at least make a reasonable call. And to me, it looks like when you are engaged in managing your investment or managing the company, let me rephrase that, not managing your investment, managing the company or the subject of your investment, you are engaged in unauthorized employment. That's the best I can tell you. I do confess, like I said, I haven't looked at this law for a while, but this is what I remember. SeaWorld, traveling to India on H-4 while H-1 pending. Huh? I think it's your, this question got posted twice. So the next question is, Kiran says, L1B to L1A. Oh, okay. That's their handle in the community. And Kiran says, I was on L1B status and did change the status to L1A. While applying for my L1B, I used my title as software engineer. For L1A, I became a functional manager. Now, if I want to go to H1B, back to software engineer, is that a problem? No problem at all. No problem at all. Especially if it is a different employer, no problem at all. You could even become an associate software engineer. It doesn't matter. Okay. Oh, yeah, you have another question. They had filed an EB1 and that got an RFE. Is there a problem to withdraw? Generally, I never advise people to withdraw after an RFE has been issued. It creates a lot of suspicion in the mind of USCIS. If you are going to withdraw, give a reason for it. And I suspect what is happening here is, and I don't remember the, again, off the top of my head, all the law, but I think you could have a problem with EB1C because you don't have 1 year of experience as a manager outside USA. Even though you converted from L1B to L1A, I think the criteria for EB1C are a little different. So, again, I always double-check the law. This is kind of, I remember this as being a little bit of a gray area. So if that is the reason for the RFE, then you can just say, okay, there is no merit in this case, we are withdrawing it. But always give a reason when you are withdrawing after an RFE is issued. Mr. Ivan has a question. He calls himself Four Turiya. I'm called Turiya Bawa Ivan. He's Ugandan. He was selected for DV lottery. What happens next? I am so sorry, Mr. Ivan. I have done only one DV case in the last several years, and that too to help somebody. We don't do DV cases. For most of these cases, we don't need a lawyer, so we don't get involved with them. So I'm not much of a help here. Here is somebody called M. Khanna. They want to start their own company, their startup. They are on a H-4 visa. What can I do? You know, I think what I want you to do is maybe wait and see what the new law does. Under the old law, you would have to invest $500,000 or $1 million, depending upon several permutation combinations. Broadly speaking, if you want to invest $500,000, you either have to go with an investment trust, which is a pre-approved scheme. Somebody else takes care of your money. You have no control over it. Or if you want to invest it yourself, you have to invest in underserved, high unemployment area, started employment area, or a rural area. Otherwise, you have to invest $1 million. You have to create or preserve 10 American jobs. None of them can be your family. Okay? So, $500,000 to $1 million. However, under the new laws, there is some mention of smaller figures, including $250,000, creating 3 American jobs, some non-immigrant visa option. So let's wait and see how that goes instead of putting in all this money, because they have not really pinned down what they can do under the current law for people in your situation. There is no separate visa for entrepreneurship right now. Hari is our next poster, Hari_Dasu. They have an issue with OCI, which is an Indian provision. We are 87 and 82 years old. Old U.S. passports expired. We were issued new passports. Oh, I see. So the problem is you have a U visa. Okay. Our OCI was issued in 2010, and U visa is stamped on an old U.S. passport. It couldn't be a U visa. It must be U visa, something to do with India. Okay. There's a U visa in USA also. That's why this is confusing. So this is what I understand your situation to be, Harji. What you're saying is, I've got two passports. On the old passport, I've got the Indian visa, but that passport has expired. Then I have the new passport. Okay. Since I don't practice in India, I don't know the Indian laws. But in America, if you had a visa stamp and your Indian passport had expired, you could carry that expired passport with the good stamp and a new passport together, and they would be considered to be okay to travel to USA. We do it all the time. I hope that Indian laws are the same, but I don't practice in India anymore. Laws can be full of surprises. So, unfortunately, I don't have a definitive answer for you. Your travel agent should be able to find that out for you quite easily. Because remember, A, it is not allowed by, for an airline to let you board a plane if you don't have proper papers. Okay? So they should be able to tell you what the papers are that they would need for you to travel. I would start by calling my travel agent. I know that the Indian consulate is not well known for its efficiency, and they don't respond to people's inquiries. So try talking with your travel agent, okay? Or your airline directly. Next question is from Inder, who posted as INS2. Effect on employment-based green card on H-1B candidate, MBA corporate finance, U.S. degree. So he's looking at these new provisions in the law, and he says, look, I'm not going to get an MBA in STEM. Is that going to help me? Well, you know, Inder, I don't really know where this law is going to go. Okay? If you know, right now, first of all, there are going to be two versions. House has its own idea of what the law should look like. Senate has its own idea. Senate proposed S-744. Today, there are 300 amendments proposed to it. So by the time this mishmash all gets sorted out, I don't know what the laws are going to look like. But it does look like they have a heavy emphasis on STEM-based degrees. But there were provisions for people who had U.S.-based master's degrees, I don't remember off the top of my head, and PhDs from any country, not just USA. So the new laws might be very, very useful for us as individuals. I guess we'll just wait and watch. Can you do anything to get your green card faster? Well, if you look at the new laws, what is the major thing that they've done with employment-based green cards? They have removed per-country quota. That's a great benefit. That means your green card could come very, very quickly. Right now, what is the law? Every country gets X thousand number of visas a year, green cards a year, whether they have a population of 1.3 billion or 800-900 from Vatican City. So the visas that are not used by that country go away. If you put them all in one bucket and everybody takes from the same bucket, no per country limits, your visas will become a lot faster. Maybe the, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, I haven't looked at the how many numbers are needed, but I suspect that everything could be cleared in a year or two. So what I would recommend is go follow your career path. If the bill does pass, we'll have a detailed talk about it. We'll all sit down, we'll do a conference. We'll go over it item by item. Frankly, I've only spent a fraction of my time because I have to make a living. I'm not a college professor. It's not my job to look at the theory of things too long and too hard. I am interested in what's going on, but I have a general idea. Until this gets crystallized, there really is no point spending hours upon hours looking at the law. You shouldn't make plans until you know what the law is. So go ahead and do what you're doing. Finish up your MBA if you want. We'll see how the green cards go when the time comes. I-131 and 470. They work for a U.S. incorporated subsidiary of a foreign bank. The bank wants to transfer them to Japan for 4 years. They're Canadian. Should they do an I-131? Absolutely. You must do an I-131. My priority is to maintain my permanent resident status. So do an I-131, as well as not resetting the clock on my naturalization. If you're not eligible to file an N-470, the clock will reset. The only advantage of having filed an I-131 for naturalization is, instead of putting in all 5 years all over again, you'll have to put in 4 years and 1 day. That's assuming you've been outside USA for a year. Okay. So if there is any 12-month period during which you did not travel outside USA, you would be eligible to file N-470. Any 12-month period. That's the way I remember it. Double check it. N-470s are very confusing because they are so counterintuitive. It almost looks like somebody made a mistake of law. Okay. So look at the N-470 very carefully. Talk with a lawyer, have somebody research this if necessary. I think if there's any 12-month period during which you did not travel outside USA, you can file N-470. Remember, N-470 does not help you with your physical presence. That's an important concept. In naturalization, there are two things involved. If you are doing naturalization based upon an employment-based green card, not a U.S. citizen marriage-based green card, you need 5 years of having had a green card. Then 2.5 years of physical presence in the 5 years immediately preceding the naturalization application. And 470 does not help you with those 2.5 years. You still have to complete those 2.5 years. It just helps in not interrupting your 5 years, because if you've been outside USA 1 year, you have to start the clock all over again unless you have filed N-470. So it merely prevents the clock from having to restart again. But 2.5 years in the last 5 years, you still have to maintain. Okay. I hope that's clear. I have a separate video on this. You can watch that. Next question is, I'm Ravi Kumar, R.A. Polu. I'm staying in USA since May 2008. It's my fifth year in USA. I didn't visit India past 5 years. Okay, so came to this country with consulting company XX, changed to YY, got 2H1B extensions, then changed, got an I-145 through YY, got an I-140 approval, changed employer to ZZ, got the H1B extension for 3 years through ZZ. My old employer, YY, did not revoke my H1B and I-140. Now I have 2 H1 approvals, and I'm planning to visit India and go for stamp. One, will it be a problem to get visa stamp because of 2 valid H1B extension papers? No. No. Will it be a problem for me to get the visa because of my approved I-140? No. That's not a ground for denial. Do I need to ask my old employer to revoke my H1B? That's what they should be doing anyway. At interview time, will the visa officer provide any option, voluntarily revoke old H1B? They usually don't bother about that. That's not their concern. That's a Department of Labor issue. If my old H1B gets revoked, then will it affect my I-140 approval now? If both old H1B and I-140 is revoked, can I use my priority date? You can use your priority date, but you will not be able to get extensions based upon the I-140 because it would have been revoked. Revocation of I-140, unless it is done by USCIS for fraud, does not take away your priority date. So if the employer revokes it, no problem, you still keep your priority date. Hello, Rajiv. I have a question about my friend's situation. The doctor applied for a B1, B2 visa in New Delhi, and he's got a 3-month visa that says USMLE exam. Now, can he apply for a change of status to F1? I don't think so. Because I remember there's a law, there's a regulation that says if you enter USA on a tourist visa and you want to convert to student, you have to declare at the airport that you want to do that. On top of that, this annotation appears to be quite clear that they are only allowing him entry for a USML exam. If I were him, I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't get an observership. I wouldn't get an extension of B1, B2. I would go back. Okay. And if he gets an F1, it's okay for him to go for stamping. instead of, you know, trying to convert status or change status, he can do that. Can he do it in Canada or Mexico? Sure. I don't see why not. Okay. Yeah, that's what it looks like, that they're constrained to 3 months because they were giving the visa specifically for USMLE. Info Ranjan says, employer change between H-1B acceptance and H-1B start with OPT valid until November. Working on F1 OPT stem extension valid until November 5th, 2013. What if I change my employment? So I'm wondering, one, once my H-1 is completely approved, how soon can I leave? Can I have my next employer apply for H-1 transfer? Right away? Right away, no problem. Is it possible to transfer the H-1 before October 1st? Definitely. Since my OPT is still valid, can I switch using my OPT? Definitely, no problem. Also, if two paystubs are needed from current employer, they are not needed. They are not needed. Okay. Not in this case when you're changing employers. AR-11 address change form. Form AR-11 has several options like A number, middle name, school employment history, etc. When I try to submit the form without filling the above fields, it doesn't allow me to do so. Why don't you mail it in? If it's giving you trouble, you can always mail it in. That's the easy answer. Just keep proof of the mailing, keep a copy as well. SWE82 says, hi Rajiv, I entered USC on advanced parole in May, got 994, which expired, and should I do something else with it? No. See, this is one of those loopholes in law, not loopholes, but one of those gaps in law, which, you know, normally you must keep your I-94 alive and active. But when it's issued in conjunction with an AP, even if it expires, it's not a problem. You want to confirm that, you can feel free to call USCIS customer service. It's never a bad idea to double check and triple check information. But in my view, it's not a problem. So even if the I-94 expires, the I-94 because it should be in conjunction with the advanced parole, it's not a problem. Ginny Bhatt, once I finish my H-1 6 years, I plan to change to I-2 and apply EAD. Can both H-1B to L-2 change of status and EAD application happen together? I think that's what we do. From what I remember, our office files both of them together. Time frame, I think it takes about 90 days to get work authorization, maybe a little bit less. Can I start working with the same employer on L2 EAD? Sure, no problem. I believe I can apply change of status H1B to L1B even when I'm on H1B last month. You know, I think we apply for EAD and L2 at the same time. I think so. If you want me to double check with our office, just send me an email to help@immigration.com. I'll double check with Anna or one of the people who are responsible for this kind of case in our office. Some of our paralegals would know the answer better than I do. Okay. Last question is ZH Wayne 72, commuter green card. They have a commuter green card. So basically they live in Canada and they travel to USA every day for their job. Okay. In 2009, they have a new baby, born in Windsor, Canada. Now they want to move back to Michigan with their family. How can I proceed? Interesting situation. How does the child come with you? Because the child is born to a U.S. green card parent, but they don't have a green card themselves. I think you have to apply for their green card, the child's green card. Can they enter before then? Contact CBP, see if they will let the child enter on a tourist visa. Because Canadians are not required to have a visa. So the idea is if you call CBP and say, look, we just want to bring the child in, he's just, you know, 4 years old. Okay, can we bring him in with us and apply for his green card in USA? Let us see what CBP says. Let me know what they say, okay? So, and if you cannot figure it out, here is the best thing to do. Just contact the congressman's office. and tell them this is a problem. Because when you are trying to cut across different agencies, congressmen can be very helpful. Let me know how it goes. I'll be most interested. Good luck. Now, guys, I'm going to open the call to follow-up questions on that which has been posted. No new questions. New questions will be the last item. Press *5 on your phone if you have a follow-up question. *5. One. Okay, just one follow-up question. Not two. I'm opening the call in the order in which people logged in. 919 North Carolina, go ahead, please.
Hi, hi Rajiv, this is Kumar. This is my first question which I posted today. So my question is, I extended only my H-1B and not for my wife H-4 because she was in India and I'm maintaining my H-1B continuously. So you said that, yeah, I can bring her on H-4, so that's fine. The only thing is, once she will come, will we apply for an advanced payroll or EAD, or is that okay if she can continue here on H-4? Is 485 any problem? No. Do we have
yours is the case where the advanced parole expired when she was outside U.S.
For her, yeah. For me, I already renewed, yeah.
Right. So, hang on, let me just find. What number question was yours?
Number one. So basically, I'm continuously maintaining, and she was in.
Yeah, right. I remember your case. So the question is, once she gets H-4 visa stamp and enters, do we have to apply for her EAD AP? You don't have to. I mean, there is a possibility the government can make the claim that since she did not have an H-4 visa stamp and her AP expired, and she got the stamp after the AP expires, we are going to treat her as having abandoned her 485, and you have to refile the 485 when the PD is current. But as long as we remember this risk, there really is no requirement that you have to file EAD, AP. As long as you maintain your H-1, she's on H-4, she's fine.
So now her 485 is abandoned, that is sure, because...
No, that's what I said. I mean, they can claim that. I don't know if it is abandoned for sure. I'm not aware of anything in law that clearly says one way or the other.
Okay. All right, okay. Thanks.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Let's go on to the next call. Area code 646, New York. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is M. Khanna. I posted the question to you about entrepreneurship and an entrepreneur's visa while I'm on an H-4 right now.
Yes, ma'am.
So I know you said that there are some changes to the law that are coming about. I was just wondering, how would you suggest I keep up or follow with what the changes are? Is there a resource or a website or a law number that I can note down and keep in, you know, just keep in close contact with?
Well, I think you can follow our website. There are plenty of other lawyers who are doing the same thing, trying to educate the community. I'm not aware of any other than the lawyers who are involved in the process. I'm not aware of any other agency who is trying to educate people in your situation. There's plenty of agencies educating people who are illegal in USA, but there are, other than lawyers, there's nobody who's educating people who are legal.
Right, but is that like is there a law number or something that I can follow? If I just even, you know, Google and research it, I just want to make sure that, you know, how would I find out if there have been any changes to that law? I just want to be updated about it.
I have a video on it somewhere. Well, you know, I don't actually come to think of it. I haven't done that yet. Okay, wait. I remember what you asked me. And I might do a video within the next, by not this weekend, but the following weekend. Because I have
so
to
a video on how to.
No, I'm going
sorry.
To
so a video on how to be an entrepreneur if you're on how to get an entrepreneurial visa.
No. I'm going to do a video that covers all the other areas of the law. I've covered H-1s and L-1s, but I did not cover the special provisions for physicians, the special provisions for PhDs, masters, the special provisions for entrepreneurs, the special provisions for nurses. All those areas I haven't yet covered. Okay.
Got it.
So And I got the presentation ready. I just haven't had time to do the video. So when I get the time, I say within the next 7-8 days, I'll have it up. And then what you have is you'll have a presentation. It will contain the section number. What section number of the law I'm talking about. There are two or three different sections. So that'll give you an idea of what to look for. But in any case, does your husband, has he applied for a green card?
He has, yeah. So both of us, I'm on his application and we're in process.
If this law passes, the green card process may become so fast, you may not need anything else.
Okay.
Right?
I just have to wait and see.
Yes, please. I'm sorry. I don't remember. Again, you know, this is 800 pages of law, 744 pages. I don't remember all the provisions. I've read through most of it, but I don't remember all the provisions off the top of my head.
No, that's no worries at all. Thank you so much. This is very helpful.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. Still going on with the follow-up question. I think there's one more. That's the last follow-up question, and then we'll start with the new ones. I don't see your phone number. It says it's blocked. Can you go ahead and talk?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead,
sir.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Rajiv, I have a question. My credit card was uploaded in 2000.
Wait. Is this a new question?
Yes, sir.
I've been saying I'll take new questions last. Hang on 1 second.
Okay.
It looks like all the old question follow-ups are over. Anybody who has a new question, sir, your hand is already up. You don't have to do it. Just anybody who has a new question, press *5 on your phone. I'll take you in the order in which you called in. Okay, there's 5 new questions. Let me start with the person who logged in the first. From Chicago. Go ahead, please. Area code 773.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Rajiv. I'm currently working for a nonprofit organization, and
okay.
I have used 4 years of my H-1B already. I would like to switch to a for-profit, but I haven't been counted in the cap yet. And as you know, the cap for this year has already been reached. If I apply for next year, that means I can only start working next October, which means I will have only about 6 months left. So I'm not sure if any for-profit company would sponsor me for 6 months. So I'm thinking about have them to apply for my EB2 green card. If that could happen, so when can I start working for the new company?
Well, your H1
situation. Is it possible at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody can apply for your green card, your current company or your future company.
Okay.
And by the way, let me tell you something interesting. When you have a quota exempt H1, you
Sorry,
can get
yeah,
it
yeah.
When you have a quota exempt H1 like you do,
mm-hmm.
you can get a concurrent H1 for a quota job. By
so
law,
does it mean a concurrent quota?
Let's say you're working 40 hours for employer XYZ, who's your current employer, quota exempt.
Mm-hmm.
Now you also get a job with employer ABC, who says, okay, you can work with me 20 to 40 hours each week, but I'm a quota employer. You can get a concurrent H1. You have to work both jobs at the same time.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So I can keep my H1B with the profit, the non-profit company,
Correct.
And at the
yeah.
same time work for a for-profit?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Okay. As long as you don't quit your non-profit job, you can run concurrently. I will have you double check that, but I remember that as a very strange quirk in the law. You can actually do that. Okay? So that's one thing to remember. So that way you might be able to start working with a new employer right away rather than having to wait until something happens with the green card. Filing of the green card does not change the H1 situation, except that it may give you additional extensions of the H1, but it doesn't make it possible for you to transfer earlier.
I see.
The only thing that makes right. So the only thing that
Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So So let's say if the for-profit company agreed to sponsor the green card for me, so how long in the process can I start working for them?
Once the H-1 is approved.
The H-1?
So what was your question? If a for-profit company starts their H-1, how soon can I start working with them, right?
No, I'm saying if the for-profit company starts sponsoring the green card for me.
That will still be October next year if you come through the quota.
Oh, that doesn't, the green card, they have to be under the quota?
That doesn't change.
They cannot apply the green card straight?
No, that doesn't change. Applying for a green card does not change the quota issue.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I see. So I have to go under the H-1B quota even if I apply for the green card?
That is correct. Right. Okay. Uh-huh. What you're confusing probably is under the new law, which they are thinking, there is some advantage to people who have filed a green card, but the employer advantage is actually to the employer, not to the employee. Don't worry about that. That's the new law. That's not yet in effect. But under the old law, which we are under right now, there is no advantage on H-1 quota because you filed a green card.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Is there any other kind of visa that I can be on to start working for a different company?
O-1 maybe. I don't know your resume. If you are an extraordinarily qualified individual, you should look at O-1.
Mm-hmm.
Which country are you a citizen of, sir?
Sorry, what's that?
Sorry?
Sorry, what did you ask me?
Which country are you a citizen of?
I'm a Vietnamese.
Vietnamese. Yeah, that doesn't help. Okay. So if you were, you know, if you were a citizen of Australia or Chile or Singapore, you could have done something like an E3 visa, which is like an H-1, but for these three countries. So, or at least quota exempt for Chile and Singapore, and E3 is for Australia. So, yeah, but Vietnam doesn't have any special visas.
Okay. So, okay. What would you recommend for my case? What would be the best option for my case?
I recommend filing for a green card as quickly as possible, because that way you can extend your H-1 indefinitely. Then the only problem is you'll be able to start full-time with the new employer in October, but not this year, but the following year. But you can start part-time or even full-time if you can work two full-time jobs now on concurrent H-1. So file green card and see if you want to do a concurrent H-1.
I see. So just one last thing, just want to confirm. So if I have the for-profit company to file the green card for me, I can start working for them next October. Is that correct?
You can start working for them in October 2014. Unless you do a concurrent H-1, then you can start as soon as that H-1 is approved.
Okay. I see. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. There is a total of 5 more people, and then we won't do any more. Let's see. Area code 571. Go ahead, please.
Oh, yes. Hello, Rajivji. This is Meeta Biswas calling from St. Louis, Missouri. How are you? I'm doing fine, thank you. First, thank you for your services. It was an excellent forum I was listening to. I have a question regarding my mom's green card application. My citizenship, as you know, when you had helped me last time, the oath ceremony is end of this month, May 31st. Is it possible that, given the fact I have been approved and there is oath ceremony, I can go ahead and apply for her application for I-31 for the relative petition and 485 right away with the support? Or is it that I have to really wait till the oath ceremony is taken and then only can I claim that I'm a citizen? What is the general norm?
The law requires you to wait until you take the oath and you are given the naturalization certificate.
I see. So there's no point. I mean, I can gather everything, and as soon as it's done, I can file, right?
That is correct. And what happens is when you take the oath, they hand you the naturalization certificate right there.
Uh-huh. I see. And that, isn't that that? Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mitaji.
Is it that that's the time I have to even give away my Indian passport? No, the Indian passport needs to be given away to the consulate.
Nobody takes away your Indian passport. That's between you and the Indian consulate.
Oh, I see. Okay. I think I'm all set. Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
Okay. Let's see. Area code 541. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Raju. Thank you so much for your service to the community. So, Raju, I have a question regarding the H-1B terms and conditions. So, Raju, currently I'm an H-1B, no EAD, nothing, just H-1B, and I'm a full-time employee to one of the employers. So, Raju, you know, my question is, can I do a voluntary work for another company without having H-1B from a different company?
Well, I have dealt with this issue several times, voluntary work. You see, the way, when I look at the law, and I have an entry on this on my blog also, if you look for the word volunteer, do a search, you should be able to pull out that entry. In my view, as long as the volunteering does not involve any money or any money promises or any benefits like health insurance, you can volunteer. For example, if you're volunteering to learn a new technology, okay? If you're volunteering to learn Hadoop, or you're volunteering to learn, I don't know, about Azure, any of these new technologies or something that's new to you, if you, for example, you're a PeopleSoft guy and you want to know what is an application, it's okay for you to volunteer. I don't see any problem with that. But you cannot use volunteering as an excuse for doing work.
Yeah, Raju, that's right. Actually, I am volunteering because of, you know, there is a new project my friend is offering for me. It has, you know, the latest technologies. Just I want to learn, you know, those technologies. So the voluntary in the sense, Raju, you know, I might be working some weekends or maybe, you know, some in the night, you know, work from home, you know, those kind of stuff.
I don't see any problem with that. As long as it is done without any benefits or any money at all, in cash or in kind, you should be okay.
But Raju, in that case, you know, how come, you know, the new company, how they are going to, you know, show, you know, my question is, you know, are they going to show me as their employee or contractor, you know, on their profile?
They cannot, obviously not, because if they want to show you as a contractor or as an employee, then good.
Okay.
So maybe an intern or somebody who volunteers there.
Yeah, Raju, I think I understand. Thank you, Raju. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, sir. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Okay. Let's go on to the next one. We have two more left. Area code 305. Go ahead, please. Miami, Florida. 305, Miami, Florida. Okay. The last call is, again, from a blocked user. Sir, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Rajiv, my green card was approved in 2009. But again in 2010, the immigration call-in said, my attorney said, USCIS erroneously approved your GC, the dates were not current, and now they send it back. So they gave me a 2000 date approval. My question is, if I happen to apply for citizenship, when do I do that? Because 2009, they sent me the approval notice, and they also stamped my passport with I-551 stamp saying that it's approved.
You can only apply.
Later, they gave me a physical card with 2010 date. Now, my question is, will I be eligible to apply for citizenship in 2014 or 15?
Let me ask you this question. You said, your lawyer said they gave you the 2009 date by mistake. Is that what you said?
Yes, by mistake, they said that your dates were not current, they should not. But in 2009, when I asked my lawyer, he said, okay, everything is fine, you can get the stamping. So I went and, you know, they gave me an I-551 stamp also. They gave twice in 2009 and 10 also. And then 2010, they said, okay, they gave me a different date on the physical card.
Let me give you a very practical solution.
Sure.
The easiest thing to do is contact your congressman and say, can you find out for me, when should I apply for my citizenship? I've got this discrepancy. Okay?
Oh,
if you
yeah.
Want, if you don't want to do that, just go and apply in 2014. If they don't want to approve it, they'll tell you to take their money and then have you apply again in 2015. No problem.
Oh, okay. That's why I don't want any take risk. That's why. Because they, in 2009 when I approved, my lawyer also inquired with them. They said he's approved. Even several times I went, they gave me the stamp for 2000, okay, saying he's approved. And I was also able to change my social security card. And even I changed employer in 2010. And late in 2010, they said, but they mentioned that, okay, they were erroneously approved in 2000. Again, they approved in 2010 with dates being concurred. And they also mentioned you will not lose your status.
Okay. I've had situations like these before. Chances are they will want you to apply in 2015. But it doesn't hurt to try in 2014 if it gets approved, Rick.
Yeah, because it's a difference of 2 years, right, Rajiv? So I just want to, because since they stamped it, so the only my concern was if they applied, will they raise a red flag or it causes any problems? No harm, right? At the most, if I applied and they don't like it, they're not give it current, right?
I don't think there should be a problem, though.
Okay, so 3 months. So thank you, Rajiv. That's the question. And before, once they said 2009, I approved, I changed my green card sponsor employer. So that should not be an issue, right, when I apply for citizenship.
When did you check your green card employer? Was it before?
They approved me in 2010. I applied in 2008. They approved me in 2009. End of 2010, I changed. Just before 3 months of when they gave me the actual physical card with a different date, 3 months before I changed.
3 months before or after? So, you...
3 months... initially 2009, they stamped it. So, but I changed employer in 2010. Somewhere June. In 2000 September, I got a new card with a new date.
Okay. Now, they can at least try to cause an issue with that, because technically you change your employers before your green card was actually approved. Since October 2000, the AC21 law has been in place. As long as you change to a same or similar job somewhere else, you should be okay.
No, but they stamped in 2025, they gave I-551 and they said they taken my EAD also.
I am on your side, but I cannot change the law or the policy for you.
Okay.
The very simple fact of the matter is, if USCIS makes a mistake, they are not bound by their mistakes. Let me give you an example. If Internal Revenue Service sends you a check for $10 million by mistake, thinking that you are Donald Trump, not realizing that you are, you know, somebody like me who doesn't have $10 million, then you go and spend that money. You cannot spend that money because they'll come after it.
Yes. But this is different because it's already, they did it. But how do I know that? Because, you know, I operated 2009.
How is it different? They have made a mistake just like IRS made a mistake. Different kind of mistake. That's the same thing. The principle is the same. Let me tell you, I'm not going to argue about this. I will just tell you what just the law as I understand it. The fact that you changed before your green card was approved can be a problem. But the fact that AC21 law allows you to do that, and it was in effect when you did that, I think you'll be protected as long as the jobs are same or similar.
Yeah, it's almost similar what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't think it's going to be a problem.
So do you advise me to, when I file 3 months before, do you advise me to appoint an attorney, because this can be a little this thing, right?
As long as you are my advice in a case like this, definitely get yourself a lawyer. It's better to have somebody who can advise you on this. Get yourself a lawyer. Get yourself a lawyer locally where you are, because then they can go with you for the interview. Of course, okay, people like us, we can help you sitting here, but we cannot go to interview in Miami or in California. That's just too expensive for you. So you're better off getting a local lawyer. And if there's something really, really complicated, then you can hire somebody in, or get a second consultation or second opinion.
I want to apply for that 2009, so in 2014 for citizenship, so I can go ahead, right? So anyway, the issue is there, so it will come out, right?
I think you should get yourself a lawyer. Let them advise you. Yeah. If I were you, I would go ahead and take a chance in according to the 2009 date, 2014.
Yeah, even my gut feeling is the same, to go for that one and see what happens, because there's a gap of 2 years what they happen. So I will do that, Rajiv, and really appreciate your honest advice and, you know, opinion. So that's what I was looking for.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you for your inputs. Bye-bye. Have a great day.
Okay. Last call. Miami, Florida. You have a question.
Hi, Rajiv ji. Namaste. This is Krishna here. I have a question. I'm an H-1B right now with my current employer who filed my green card, and I have approved, my 140 has been approved, and I have an EAD that's valid for next 2 years. I don't have any document from my employer. Now I want to change the job, and I cannot do that because I don't know which category the job has been applied. And if I change to EAD right now, Is it possible by law they have to give all the documents to me?
Unfortunately, the laws on the green card side are very murky. You know what you should do? You should file a Freedom of Information Act request with the Department of Labor for a copy of your ETA 9089. You should file a request with USCIS for a copy of your immigration file. Okay? So that this is a free application. It might take a few weeks to process. Do these two things, that will help you.
And what exactly the documents that I need to collect to apply for that?
Now, there is a form for Freedom of Information Act request. I forgot the name of the form.
My question is, actually, do I need any document from the employer or anything regarding the green card is as in filed or any other document? Or I can just leave my name?
You should be able to get it just by your social security number, name, and A number.
Ah, okay. I have the A number in the EAD, so I think that will be helpful.
You only need the A number, that's all you need.
Okay. And how long normally it takes to get all those details?
I do not know. A few weeks.
Okay. I'll contact your office to help me on this one.
Well, you don't need a lawyer for this. You can do it yourself.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much for your help.
You're welcome, sir. All right, guys, good talking with all of you, and I'll talk with you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.